And now we move into the 30th chapter. And it came to pass, when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south and Ziklag, and smitten Ziklag, and burned it with fire. So we see that David and his men find a very tragic scene when they come back to their home city. The Amalekites, those that David had recently fought against and had been so successful against, those that Saul and originally was to have completely annihilated, and he failed to do so. He didn't carry out the will of God and destroy all of them as he was supposed to have done, but he left some, and consequently, these same people, these Amalekites, have now done this bad thing to the city of Ziklag in this area of the south. We see that this may be retribution to David for having left his family here and for having marched with the Philistines in the first place. They really shouldn't have been marching against the people of God under any circumstances. This also is a result of the sin of Saul and not doing what God warned him to and destroy this people. But we see a strange thing in verse 2. Although they had invaded this area, and although they had smitten the city of Ziklag and had burned it with fire, verse 2 says, and had taken the women captives that were therein, they slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. So the people were not put to death. And it's a wonder they had not have slain them all. But they didn't do this. They let them live, and they just carried them away captive. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. So we see what a tragic scene is found here as David and his men return. Apparently they had no prior knowledge to what had happened. And as they come back to what they hope is going to be a joyful reunion with their families, they find their city has been looted and burned, and their families have been taken away captive. So this was a very sad sight. This was the fruits of them having left their families and gone off on an adventure that they should not have been involved in the first place. But it also seems to be the divine providence of God that the people that were captured were not put to death. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. They were very sad and very distressed at this sight that they found. And even though they are grown men, men of war, men accustomed to seeing all kinds of tragic things, now we get right down to the very closest thing that they could be involved with, and that is their families. They've lost their families. And so they weep, and they weep until they have no more power to weep. And that's a lot of grieving, a lot of weeping. And it indicates to us how very, very hard they took this news and this findings of their city. And David's two wives were taken captive, Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. So the very closest thing that could have been taken away from David, his wives, were also involved with this. But we also realize that the rest of his men had the same problem. Their wives, their sons, their daughters were also taken captive. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. So we see now that David is at his very lowest ebb. Shortly before taking the throne of Israel, he has been cast down by the lords of the Philistines. He has been put down by them and ridiculed and disgraced. He has had his city to be burned and sacked, and his family to be carried off as captives. He now has his own people to turn against him, those that he trusted so closely, those that he'd done so much for, those that he'd given succor and protection to. They're speaking of stoning him because of their grief for their loss, and they're blaming David with this. So we can see that David must be at the very lowest ebb. What shall he do now? He has been certainly cast out by Saul. He can't turn to Saul. He can no longer receive any immediate comfort from the king of the Philistines. He's involved in the battle. And so we find that, but David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. So the one most important thing for David to do in a time like this, and the one most important thing for us to do in our times of distress, is to turn to God. Encourage ourselves in the Lord our God. Turn to God for help. Turn to God for wisdom. Turn to God for guidance. Turn to God for a way of escape. And that's what David does. So those that have taken on the Lord for their strength may get encouragement from him in the very worst of times. So when David was at his wit's end, he was not at his faith's end. At those times when we are most afraid, at those times when we cannot trust anyone round about us, when it seems that maybe all have turned against us, when it seems that none can be looked to for comfort, we can always turn to God. And as we know, we can find no better source for help or comfort than God. Verse 7, And David said to Abiathar the priest, Abimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. So he still has the priest with him, Abiathar, and he asked him to bring the ephod. And this ephod would have the Thummim and the Urim in it, by which they could inquire of God as to what God's will was. And Abiathar brought hither the ephod to David, and David inquired at the Lord, saying, Shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered, Pursue, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. So David has to decide what to do. Rather than blast out against those that are wanting to stone him, rather than try to maybe hang the ringleaders of those who are talking of mutiny, he decides what kind of action to take. He consults God first of all, and God says, Pursue, go after them, you're going to be able to recover all. So David went, he and the 600 men that were with him, and came to the brook Besor, where those that were left behind stayed. Now there were some of the men who were so weak, they were so faint, they could not continue on the pursuit at this point. They couldn't get across the brook Besor, so he had to leave behind some of them. But David pursued, he and 400 men, for 200 abode behind, which were so faint they could not go over the brook Besor. So we see here's another trial for David. Part of his men, one-third of his men, not able to continue with him. He has to decide, shall I go on without him or not? And he does. And this we see is a trial of faith. Do I put more dependence in God, or do I put more dependence in what I can temporally see here with my men? And the trial of faith then was won out by David in that he did put his dependence in God. He did press on even though he lost a part of his followers, a part of his help. And we're going to see that in our battles, we're going to have some trials. We're going to have times in which a part of our force is going to seem to be lost. A part of those that should be helping us are no longer going to be able or willing to help. And we have to decide to press on without them with the help of God. Verse 11, And they found an Egyptian in the field and brought him to David and gave him bread, and he did eat, and they made him drink water. Now here we're going to see where God, through his providence, it gives them help. God takes the small things, he takes the lowly and the base things of the world to bring down the mighty. So here they find this Egyptian lad who was a slave of the Amalekites. They find him in a very poor condition, and he is going to be one that will aid them in finding the Amalekites. And they gave him a piece of a cake of figs and two clusters of raisins. And when he had eaten, his spirit came again to him, for he had eaten no bread nor drunk any water 3 days and three nights. So this poor Egyptian lad was about to starve to death. And although David and his men didn't seem to have all that much to spare, they did take good care of him. They fed him. They gave him not only things to drink, but they gave him two clusters of raisins and a cake of figs and all the water that he needed so that he was able to revive himself. And when his strength came back then, they began to find out who he was and what the circumstances were. And David said unto him, To whom belongest thou, and whence art thou? And he said, I'm a young man of Egypt, servant to an Amalekite, and my master left me because 3 days ago I fell sick. So what happened is this man was a servant to one of these Amalekites, a very cruel master he had, for when he got sick, he left him to die. He apparently thought with all the spoil and all the people that he had conquered in this recent excursion of the Amalekites, David's family being among them, that he didn't have any need for a sick slave anymore. So rather than help him, rather than give him comfort, he left him to die. And we can see then that this was certainly a very cruel act on the part of this young man's master. we made an invasion upon the south of the Shithrithites, and upon the coast which belongeth to Judah, and upon the south of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. So this young man, this slave of the Amalekites, once he's revived and begins to talk and have a memory of what has happened, tells David and his men what they'd done, exactly what kind of a problem they were up against. They had invaded this southern part of Judah. They had invaded this area of Caleb, south of Caleb, and they'd burned this city of Ziklag with fire. And remember some of the things that are mentioned here that these Amalekites had done. David had recently claimed to have done to the king Achish of the Philistines. David falsely claimed to have done this so that he would be in good standing with Achish. But actually, now these things that David had claimed to have done were actually done. They were now reality. And this might produce a very strange feeling on the part of David to know what he had claimed to have done and didn't do now really had been performed. And David said to him, "Canst thou bring me down to this company?" So he asked the young man if he can show him where the Amalekites are. Can you bring me to this company? And he said, "Swear unto me by God that thou wilt neither kill me nor deliver me into the hands of my master." Now this young man wanted some assurance that he wasn't going to have harm come to him. First of all, he didn't want David to kill him. And second of all, he didn't want David to deliver him back into the hands of his master. And so the greatest assurance that he could have was to ask David to swear unto me by God, not the God of the Amalekites, not the gods of the Egyptians, no idolatrous God, but by the true and living God, swear unto me by God that thou wilt neither kill me nor deliver me into the hand of my master, and I will bring thee down to this company. So this oath by David was assurance enough for this young man to go ahead then and do what David wanted. And when he had brought them down, behold, they were spread abroad upon all the earth, eating and drinking and dancing because of all the great spoil that they had taken out of the land of the Philistines and out of the land of Judah. So we find that David and his men find these Amalekites in a very uncompromising position. They had gotten just far enough away that they thought they were safe from any kind of retaliation. They couldn't wait to go to a further distance to begin enjoying their spoils. They felt that David and his men were long gone to the far north, involved in the battle between the Philistines and the armies of Saul, but not knowing that David was hot on their trail and fixing to overtake them. So here they were eating and drinking. They were spread abroad on the earth. They didn't have even the captives rounded up into a secure place, and they were enjoying the great spoil that they'd taken out of the land of the Philistines and from Judah. And David smote them from the twilight even unto the evening of the next day, and there escaped not a man of them, save 400 young men, which rode upon camels and fled. So everyone was killed, everyone was overcome, except these 400 young men that did escape on camels. And they fled. They were no longer in kind of a threat to David, especially not at this time, because they were running for their lives. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives. So everything that was taken, everything that was stolen, was now recovered. He seemed to have gotten it all back. And a special mention is made here of David rescuing his two wives, because this was the most important thing to David, just as the wives and families were the most important thing to the other men that were with him. So all the people that had been taken captives were recovered. And as we mentioned before, this is no doubt an act of providence on the part of God that these people's lives were spared so that David and his men could have their families back. And there was nothing lacking to them, neither small nor great, neither sons nor daughters, neither spoil nor anything that they had taken to them. David recovered all. So David was able to get everything back. He recovered all. And as we can imagine the desperation that David and his men felt, they had wept till they were weary from weeping. They had been so frustrated that the men were going to turn against David and stone him to death. They were in a very, very distressed situation, and the greatest answer that they could possibly have had to their prayers at that moment was to have gotten their families back as well as their belongings. And so we see that that very thing did happen. They recovered all. anything that had been taken from them was now given back. And so God did answer their prayer. God was with them. And in the end, things worked out well for David and his men. At the time that it looked so bleak, it now works out well. And David took all the flocks and the herds, which they drave before those other cattle, and said, "This is David's spoil." So everything that was recovered here now became David's spoil. By the laws of war, it was now his possession, regardless of where it had come from originally. So David seems to have gained more at the end of this battle than he had lost before it began. He got not only all that belonged to him and his men back, but now they also possessed all the other things that the Amalekites had captured, and it became David's spoil. So in the end, they gained more than they lost, and this all has to be due to the great divine providence of the hand of God. Well, that ends our lesson for this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.